Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very tall leader from the corporate world, from Sydney, Australia, Mr. Murali Sagi. Murali, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Mr. Sagi is an experienced senior executive in IT management and law. He has been recognized with the Public Service Medal in 2007 on the Queen's Birthday Honours, and he's worked with several international organizations in many countries. So Murali, let me start by asking you, how did your journey evolve from engineering to becoming a lawyer and a senior executive?
Thank you, Ashutosh, for the interesting question. I've been asked many times by many people. What I realized that to really understand your work, understand the world, you have to understand that people think, there are some people who think qualitatively, there are some people who think quantitatively, but there are very few people who can think both qualitatively and quantitatively.
Well said.
And without having a certain understanding across the spectrum, you can't really affect much change. So, and I've always been thirsty for knowledge, not thirsty just for the learning, to apply the learning to make extra money, but thirsty for knowledge's sake. So I just drifted in from electronics engineering, computer science, business management, and then law.
Wow. So let's talk about leadership. You know, you've led so many different organizations and at such senior levels. Let me start by asking you a very basic question. How has emotional intelligence played a role in your leadership style?
Listen, the way to look at it is we do come up with new phrases every few years. When I started life, there was no phrase called emotional intelligence.
Absolutely.
So my interpretation of emotional intelligence is purely about being a good person, being kind and decent. Being kind and decent is not a sign of weakness,
yeah.
So I might interpret. It just means that you have a respect for a fellow human being and what they're going through. Right? You can still have that fit into your own goals for the organization, for you, and for their own goals, and make sure you still can achieve the right outcome.
Yeah, what a great response. My next question is, given the kind of diverse experiences you had, not just in IT management and law, but also in several international organizations, how important has mentorship been in your career? And do you mentor others as well?
I would argue almost all of us got to where we got to because other people played a very important role in our lives. Be it your father, be it your mother, be it your spouse, be it your friends, and be it your professional colleagues. Nobody, I mean, you may not always view it as mentorship, but the knowledge, information they share with you and the guidance they provide you plays such an important role. To give you an idea, long time back in my previous innings, you will not believe it, I started life as an industrial pH controller designer, then ground control radars on landing aircraft in bad weather conditions, then supporting telecommunication equipment, and so on and so forth. Then one of the previous bosses said to me, Molly, whatever you do in your life, if you can remember this, always leave a place better than you found it. Then you'll be all right. Really? And I thought that was a very nice thing to say and to remember. And since then, I've been very fortunate to have met a lot of people, just like yourself, who had very high ideals and wanted to achieve things to make a difference. So I was greatly inspired by a number of mentors.
I just, I just,
I like to pass on whatever I've learned. So I do mentor. Let's say I'm fortunate enough to be given the opportunity to mentor a lot of people through the Australian Computer Society and the Institution Engineers Australia. But apart from that, a good word at the right moment, no matter how short it is, can make a huge difference to someone's life.
Very interesting. Thank you. And, given the fact that, over the years you have led different teams across different countries, can you share with me your approach to modern management and how it has evolved over the years?
This is I can speak obviously based on what I've observed over the last 3 decades. The approach to management has to change as the demands change. What was true when Peter Drucker put out his theories may not work. The core principles might remain the same.
Correct.
The requirements need to be adapted. It's like all living things, you have to adapt to circumstances. Through globalization, the workforce has changed dramatically. So certain societies view and expect a hierarchical management. Certain societies expect a more collaborative management. Certain societies expect a more servant leadership type of management. So it's a matter of adapting yourself to the circumstances that are presented to you. As to what is my personal preference, it is about becoming a facilitator, a mentor, and a person who provides a degree of vision so that the people working with you can self-actualize. Because otherwise, you come to a situation where you have some people, by being a coordinator, they think they're good managers, some people by just supervising, they think good managers, and so on and so forth.
What a great
There's
response.
no correct answer.
What a great response. Thank you. So I'm going to now shift gears a little bit and talk to you about your work in the area of law and the legal system. And when I was reading about you, your work has had an impact on the legal system in New South Wales and beyond. Tell me, what was this impact and how did you do it?
Once again, you do not know where your life takes you. Did I think about it when I was in India working in Hindustan Aeronautics, working on ground control radars, that I'll be coming and doing the type of work that I did? No, I did not. But that interest in making a difference, shifting the needle on the dial, was always there. What it is decision making is subject to a lot of human frailties based on whether you've had lunch or not had lunch, whether you've had a good night's sleep or not, whether you like somebody as you see them or you don't like them. There are so many inconsistencies that can flow into decision making. The way to probably control it, as Daniel Kahneman has argued, is to engage your cognitive side of it by engaging system two thinking. To do that, you need to be able to collect data on previous decisions and present it in a manner that is easily accessible and usable. If you have the desire, the friction to get the data is so high, you can't get access to it. Now, I was fortunate to be able to design decision support systems, which have changed the way sentencing practice happens in Australia.
Very interesting. And how can innovation and technology further revolutionize the legal field, not just in Australia, but around the world?
Continuing from my previous answer, decisions have a huge impact on people's lives. any noise in the decision making will not only impact the person who's subject to the decision, but the decision maker themselves, and also the decision for the community. To avoid that, we have to use technology. See, people, there's a lot of argument saying there could be inherent bias because of technology, because of artificial intelligence, because of all that. No doubt, all issues, all things have flaws. But this is on the assumption that human beings are perfect. Human beings have no frailties. So, as has been said by many people, human beings alone or computers alone have flaws in their decision making. But together, there's a chance of making a better decision.
Well said, well said. And Murli, you have worked with governments, with the private sector, and I'm sure a lot of other quasi-government bodies as well. How does your approach differ when you work with government or with the private sector?
Both are trying to achieve what they set out to achieve, but the manner in which they go about it is different. Governments exist to provide a service for the well-being of the citizen. They're given a sum of money and asked to use that money as efficiently as possible to deliver the outcomes which make life better for people. In the private sector, you set out to provide a product or a service. That product or service is something that a customer desires, and you provide it to them so that it meets their end goal. But while doing that, because you're not given a pot full of money, you have to maintain sufficient margins. You protect the margins, you've got to increase it. Now, to control that you don't overcharge, over-increase, you have the free market economy. But free market economy does not always work very well. Sometimes distortions occur in the market, or customers need to be protected. At that time, you need government regulations. So it is my belief that both are very, very important aspects of a well-functioning economy. What I would like to see is removing that silo between both of them and allowing people to go back and forth seamlessly. So making sure that the government salaries become as competitive as the private sector salaries and private sector salary, so that people are willing to move back and forth. So a private sector manager should be able to go and work in the public sector for a while and then go back out, so that you have a much more well-rounded workforce who actually understand how the machinery of the whole economy works.
What a great response. And I think the only country that has managed to bridge this significantly is Singapore, where
To an
they
extent,
managed to.
Australia have done that too. To an extent, we have a lot of
Oh,
movement.
wonderful. Okay. So my next question to you is on culture, and you live in an incredibly diverse, culturally diverse country. How do you ensure cultural inclusivity in all the different roles that you play?
I would say it is about understanding that the art of listening is as important as the art of speaking.
Well said.
When you come across someone who you do not know, does not fit into the circumstances you know, if you can devote the time and energy to listen, that would inform your thoughts. And then have the curiosity to understand what makes them tick, motivates them, what questions you can ask. he'd be in a much, much better position to understand and manage. And human beings at the basic level are the same or are all around the world. It's just that they are a product of their circumstances. Like even yourself and myself, both come from an Indian background, but our circumstances, our experiences, our education, our family life, all are different. So if we respect that we are different and we're open to listening to each other without conflating the person and the idea, right? If you're not conflating the person and the idea, then you can have that contest of ideas.
Amazing, amazing. Very, very good response. Thank you. And moving from culture, I want to talk to you about ethics and how do you integrate ethical considerations into your own decision-making processes?
This is a very interesting question. Maybe this feels more like an interrogation than now. I think ethics, once again, is a very, very deep and meaningful subject. It's highly subjective based on where you are, where you stand, which society you're at, and what level you are. But understanding the difference between the right and wrong is a start, right? If you do not know what's the right or wrong yourself, first step would be to find out what's the right thing and what's not the right. Next, have a clear idea of what particular area that you're looking at, what are the guiding principles in each of those areas, and then make sure you understand all the guiding principles. Then you apply them as it is expected that you apply. So it's an area which is constantly changing and evolving. See, what was ethical or correct in the 1950s is completely
Different today.
possible. So we need to constantly adapt and do not get into that comfort zone that we know it all.
Well said. Well said. So time for two or three more questions for you. How did, you were honored with the Public Service Medal in 2007. What did receiving this amazing recognition mean to you personally and professionally?
I've always viewed life as this. There is a person and there's what they do. It's important to get a real understanding, not to conflate the two. So I viewed the recognition as a recognition of my work for which a number of people contributed. As you would know, the secret to success is to surround yourself with people better than you are.
Well said.
So I've had a lot of wonderful people, mostly who contributed to what I did, and that's the work which got recognized. And I have got the reflected glory of that recognition on me as a person.
Well said. You're being very modest, but you're so right. You're so right. So I've got time for two more questions, and I was trying to decide what to ask you. But I must ask you this question. How do you want to be remembered in terms of your own professional legacy and the impact that you have made so far?
I'll be pretty short about this as somebody who tried to make a difference. And tried to train others to continue the journey.
Well said. And really, my last question to you, and this is for the many people who will listen to our conversation. From a young engineer in Hindustan Aeronautics Limited to where you are today, what would you say are three lessons you would want a lot of young viewers and listeners to take away from your amazing journey?
One is don't be afraid to admit ignorance. When you admit ignorance, you start to learn. And when you start to learn, you realize how little you really know.
Wonderful.
And when you really learn something, think of life not just as that piece of puzzle that you've learned, but a huge puzzle of this landscape. So many other pieces, they all have to fit in together. So when you think of your piece, think that there are so many other pieces which need to fit together. And the more understanding you have of more pieces in that puzzle, the better you would have an understanding of the world.
Very well said. And on that note, Murli, and your amazing piece of advice, don't be afraid to admit ignorance, because once you are able to admit ignorance, you start to learn. Very powerful statement. I love the way you talked about always leave a place better than you found it. I think amazing words of wisdom from someone with your experience. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for speaking to me about the incredibly multifaceted life you have led, not just across different organizations and across countries, but across different specialisms in information technology, management, and law. Thank you again for speaking to me, Murli, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.